You are listening to 15 Minutes, the show with Osiris Munir, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, what's happening with my kindreds out there? What I want to know, the question for today is, did you work the week or did the week work you? Okay. This week was hella fight. I mean, coming out of all those retrogrades and everything. And when I think about what it takes to do a daily life every day, people are really challenged with the new regime, a whole new world, a whole new platform. Everybody should be working at how to flex our mindset. You know, everybody should be working to understand, how do we go from here to the next step that we have to take? All those kind of things. I want to share something really quick with you before I bring on our marvelous guest. You'll enjoy. I believe that our life condition determines how we face and handle each situation in the environment, and that our environments we create by our mental thinking, what we say, what we do. So I want all of you to be really honest with yourself and go way back in time. When you were younger, your parents told you things, you told yourself things, your friends, family, those kind of things, and how much of that you took on to ourselves, and how much of that we outgrew and stood tall and firm in the who we are and what we believe in. So I want to read you something really, really quick. Before we say that, I want to give out a shout out to our sponsor. Yay! Kevin Pike, Coldwell Banker, Senior Real Estate and Probate Specialist, Kevin Pike. Of Coldwell Banker, 818-571-1508. Again, Senior Real Estate and Probate Specialist Kevin Pike of Coldwell Banker, 818-571-1508. Now back to our show. So as I was saying, the way we believe is we believe that in order to stay healthy and have a healthy, creating healthy environments, that the mind and the heart more than the mind, has to stay healthy. Has to stay healthy. That means all of the different life conditions we go through. We have what we call our bodies. We give way to these ideas like our homes, human relationships, all these things we do from day to day. And what we do is we go through something called the 10 worlds. So the 10 worlds are basic. All of the conditions of life, I'll run them down real quick and then we'll introduce our guests. They are called, ready? Hell, hunger, animality, anger, tranquility, or humanity, rapture, learning, realization, bodhisattva, which is compassion and service to others, and the Buddhahood. These are states of conditions that we as human beings go through every day to day. So now that you kind of understand what I said, maybe you can pay attention and see how we ourselves as human beings, not anybody outside, not the government, not your race, not your friends, your family, but we, by our own mindset, internally, externally, create an environment around ourselves. For example, if you are a hellish kind of person and you create hell, everybody, everywhere you go, it's arguments, fighting, nothing but that, your life condition and internal life is in a state of hell. That's why the environment looks like that. I want you to think about it and think what we do to create our daily lives every day. And now for our guest. For those of you who don't know, I have the privilege of bringing this bad, wonderful, when I say bad, I mean good bad, guy from human collection, I say, even though he doesn't collect humans, he collects things that humans like. His name is Joe Moe. He is of a studio called Studio Auctions, which is based here in Burbank, California. And what they do, Joe and his partner and the people that work with them, they take historical memorabilia, all of your historic things. Like right now, we're going to go into celebrating the 50th anniversary of Star Wars in May. Yay! Star Wars. And today, in April, we're also celebrating Danny Kaye. They do a number of things that they present these auctions of all these things that were worn in famous movies and cinematographer. His name is Joe Moe, and he is here with us today from Studio Auctions. Hey, Joe.
Hi, how's it going, Osiris? Hello, friends out there. Thanks for having me. It's going to be fun.
Our kindreds amongst us. So one of the questions I want to ask you is, how did you start Studio Auctions? What prompted you to want to do that? And you were telling me about your mentor before we came on.
Sure. You know, like many of you who live outside the big cities, rural America and across the globe, I was a little kid growing up in Hawaii on a little island. So I had all of the ambitions and all the love of fantasy and film that all of us share. But again, I was isolated from it. So I always dreamt of coming here and I watched every movie I could. And in watching movies, I discovered a magazine called Famous Monsters of Filmland magazine. And it seemed like a kind of specific publication because it was about horror movies and monsters. But what that movie did was the first time in an entertainment movie magazine, it turned the spotlight from the stars to the people who made movies, the directors, the writers, the makeup artists. And so a whole bunch of us little kids suddenly realized, oh, it's not the stars and the doctors who make monsters, it's the creatives. And so kids who grew up to be people named Steven Spielberg and Guillermo del Toro and Tim Burton and Kirk Hammett and John Lennon, you go down the line, Elvira, these were all people that sort of had their awakening to the fact that they could participate in this great creative, artful medium called filmmaking. Mm-hmm. And from that spread out a joy of collecting props and relics from those films, which really makes our business and the auction business kind of special. Some of the auction houses will deal in things that are highly valuable, but transactional. You collect things because for investment. In our space, we're selling vessels of your memories. So we're selling beautiful objects that immediately bring to you an image of Star Wars, a lightsaber. Immediately you think of the first movie your parents took you to, maybe the final movie your grandparents took you to, maybe the first movie you took your kids to, because it's all multi-generational. So our pieces, the things we sell, hold so much sentiment and emotion in them, a lot more than other spaces. And that's what makes our space interesting to most people, whether you're a coin collector, a stamp collector, a comic collector, everybody watches movies. So that's where the common relationship comes into it.
I love that. That's interesting how you got into it. And you were saying you started as a kid. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people will, which I started laughing, a lot of people, when you say the word auctions, all I can hear is you know, that kind of thing. So this auction is very different, but does it involve an aspect of selling where somebody has to announce what's being sold and then they bet on it and all of that? Does that happen?
Yeah, I call the auction myself. You know, I'm here. I know the material as well as anyone. So it's a lot of fun to call these auctions. And our auction is not a cattle auction or car. How many people? 4, 4, 4, 5, 450, which is what you're used to hearing. Our auction is very California. It's like, dude, do you want to bid $500? All right. Anybody want to go? You know, we're very slow and patient. We're dealing in a new world where there's four ways to bid. You can come in and old school, hold a paddle up. Mm-hmm. You can bid through your keyboard. You can leave like an eBay bid where you leave the max you're willing to pay. And I would advance that until you've hopefully won or someone's exceeded you. And then there's also phone bidding, where that's the next best thing to being here, where you can call one of our phone bidders who are also experts in the material and they'll tell you exactly what's going on in the room. So with all those moving parts, it's really hard to just do that rapid fire auctioneering anymore. You really kind of have to slow it down and make sure, you know, you're timing it for delays and things. And what it becomes is a kind of a fun conversation with people who want the stuff and people and the people who are fighting for it. And a lot of people who just want to participate in watching what it's valued at and learning a little more about the history of the piece, which is something we are able to provide in our specialty too.
Now, how do you, I was wondering, because you deal with such audience out there, my kindreds mm-hmm. out there, you must understand these things are very, very expensive. So I think I saw something about, it must have been Luke, somebody's sword or something they used to have, mm-hmm. that lighter thing he had like that. Mm-hmm. It was like $2 or $3 million. I'm like, what? Yeah. Who can afford these things?
Here's the thing about auctioning. You know, all of those pieces are always going to get the attention. They're hallmark, landmark pieces, or as collectors will sometimes call the piece of a movie, a holy grail object. Okay. It's the one that you must have. It's the consummate piece. But really, there's something for everyone in a sale. You may hear about a pair of ruby slippers that sold for $32 million, but there's also posters and signed objects that might sell for $200. So if you want to have a piece of your favorite title, and if it means a lot, or if it's something you want to share with your kids or put in a place of pride to share with other people, then there's going to be things for you too. Yes, you're going to hear about the top 10 things that sold for hundreds of thousands, $1 million, whatever, but an auction that we do, and we do boutique auctions, smaller ones than some of the other companies, 250 lots. So there's a lot for people to look at, and there's options and price points for everybody to participate if they want to.
Where do you, the other thing, what are the rules and regulations regarding handling these types of things? You have to be very careful. Mm-hmm. And then number two, where's the space that you create to have the auctions? I know it's not at Sotheby's or anywhere like that, is it?
No, those are some of our competitors. Those are other companies. They're, you know, I've come from the big companies, and I ended up here because it allows me, it's Studio Auctions, allows me to curate things with the team. It allows us to give attention to all 250 things. When I was working in the bigger companies, in a 1,200 lot sale or a 2,000 lot sale, good luck giving everything attention. And if you've been in this business long enough, which I have, the dealers and the sellers and the buyers are my friends. And I want to give everything attention. You know, they deserve it. Mm-hmm. They've preserved these things. They've taken great care of them. They're ready to turn them over to people, because in our business, if you think about it, nobody owns anything. We're visiting it, right? Until the next person inherits it from us. So we take the best care of it we can. And what's better than knowing you're passing it on before you go, unless you want to be buried with it. You're passing it on to somebody who's going to take as good care of it as you did, maybe better, and continue to share it. So that's one of the beauties of our business too.
So it is an emotional kind of thing. Like if you were really into these things, like I am very emotional about movies, and they strike emotion depending on where we were in our lives when these movies came out, what we watched the movies for, what we did. Mm-hmm. In your line of work, and when you are preparing to do an auction, how much time, how much space mm-hmm. goes into the preparation before you're ready to present it to the public, and then after you're presented and you've done what you've done with the sales, what happens to the rest of the things that were not purchased or you were not able to get collected?
That's a great question. Well, you know, in our business, it starts out with the same inspiration that we hope to pass on to the buyer. Something comes in, when we put our gloves on, we put our hands on it, and it transforms us just like it would the person that's dying to own it. I like to say we love the stuff as much as anyone who can afford it because some of it's expensive. But basically, coming back to your opening, which was very beautiful, about going back to when you were a kid, going back to the beginning and kind of tracing forward how you know what we've kept and what we've lost. Anybody that picks up a lightsaber hilt immediately becomes 12 years old. They hold this and immediately they're going, wong, 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 you know, making the sound effect. Everybody, you know, we share these memories. So the first part of this business is having people that love the movies and love the material that comes from it. Some of them who've made some of this stuff, having a relationship with it, because that's what we're going to offer to the buyer. Yes, we're going to tell you what it is, what it's made out of, where you see it in the movie, what condition it's in, and what you maybe can expect to pay for it. And so our whole job is to give context to the pieces. Anybody can write a technical, you know, description of something. It's cast of fiberglass. It measures this much. It's this heavy. This is where it was. But to say how, you know, the connection between Seven Samurai and Star Wars, you know, mm-hmm. the idea of samurai swords and lightsaber, any context we can bring that excites us about the material, we try to pass on to remind people, because, you know, the audience as well as the buyer, you know, that, yeah, you guys like some cool stuff, and it's important. You know, it is historical material that is about our collective consciousness the zeitgeist, the culture, the societal moments, the eras that it comes from. It's mm-hmm. all encapsulates that, you know, people are so driven by memory, by the scent of something that will bring back a memory, and, you know, seeing the shape of a lightsaber and immediately knowing what that is, and immediately knowing everyone that walks past it will share that memory. It's a pretty potent.
It's a potent package. It's a potent package, and the ability to, I know, in right now with so much technology and AI and all of these things, and for us to be able to go somewhere that we can connect to some collectible or something historic, that can fill some of the void and the emptiness that comes with not being able to, you know, you're 90 years old or you're 80 or whatever, or sick to whatever you are, and everybody's passed on and your friends have moved out of the city or they no longer are interested in what you're interested in. And you have a collectible or something that you can hold close to yourself to feel that connection that that so many people need today. I want to ask
boy,
you
hit on that. Yeah.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
You touched on that. It is also a bridge. It, when people are holding a lightsaber or an idol from Indiana Jones or a gun from a Clint Eastwood movie, there's no politics or religion or, you know, there's no distinction. Everybody has the same experience of, oh, I remember that. Oh, I remember when this happened and that happened. Everything else sort of fades away and it brings us back together in our common experience and, you know, the things we share as opposed to things we're constantly concentrating on that separate us, you know. So it is this simple object can have the power to, for a moment in time, unite everybody beyond any personal issues and come together in this shared experience of seeing this movie and this excitement or this fantasy or, you know, these things that we love together.
Just like music, that ability to bond culture because of what we're into. Not that you're this or that, but look, we're all kindreds. We're into this. Mm-hmm. You know, we're into this. How much, let me ask you something, the celebrities that were involved in these various specs, unless they're no longer with us, do they ever show up in any of the auctions and do autographs or, you know?
Not they will sometimes. If they, you know, one of the tenets of the auction business, and it's one of the most important things, so that people can feel comfortable letting things go and buying things, buyers and sellers are completely confidential. Now, there's an exception to that. If a celebrity is auctioning things off for charity and things like that, and they feel that their name will add value, then they will come forward and they might, you know, host something or whatever. But generally speaking, you know, people don't want people to know that they're letting things go, or people, you know, are uncomfortable letting things go, or they don't want them to think that they're doing it for money, or, you know, there's all kinds of variables that come into play. So for us, it's just, you know, we assure everybody that unless you tell us otherwise, your name will be kept confidential. If a buyer was to call and say, who'd you get that from? We're not allowed to say, you know.
That's good. That's good. You're not allowed to say. You don't know, you know, what people's intentions are.
Yeah, that's one of the basics. You know, we across the business, we just, confidentiality is really important. So,
well, how do you get them? Do the people call you and say, hey, Joe, hey, Brad, listen, I got an original blah, 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 blah over here from the movie Timbuktu. And I am just sitting here. Yes, just sitting here collecting dust. It's going to be worth something probably in about 50 years from now. Can you take care of it? Is that how it happens or how does it happen?
That's how it happens. You know, somebody, hopefully by reputation, somebody says, oh, these guys are right for you. They do a smaller sale. They'll do a suite of your material. They'll do 100 lots just dedicated to you, or they'll talk about the legacy of your family who created the stuff. So, you know, we can do some things that the big companies can't. The big companies can pull out the big guns and do a 2,000 lot sale and have, you know, balloons and fireworks, but they can't do a 250 lot sale where we embrace every single piece and we give it the care and attention that a $3 million piece would have, even though it's a $50 piece or whatever it is we're selling. We try to give respect to everything that we have. And people tend to, the rest is all sort of terms. This is how we'll present it. This is, you know, this is when we'll do it. This is, you know, this is what we plan for it. And then they go, oh, I like your approach best. You're the one for me, you know.
And then is there a certain amount of time that you scaled out for presenting the items, getting rid of the items being collected, or did they go back into storage? What happens if the items are not purchased, or, and then, you know, what happens after that?
Well, first of all, you hit the timeline just right. We get something in, and the majority of the time is spent doing our research and telling its story and photographing it and giving it as much glamour as we can. Then it goes and sits in the secured vault, and we start promoting. But the funny thing about the auction business is, while we get a head start, we may take 3 months leading up and do promotion, the auction business is very urgent. I think of the auction business as a frozen yogurt coupon. I know that sounds silly, but think about it. If I send you a catalog, right, or if I give you a coupon of some kind, you get it, you know, and you say, wow, this is great, and you put it on your refrigerator. Now, if I've given that to you 6 weeks in advance of the auction, you're going to put another coupon and a car wash sticker, and pretty soon it's going to get buried behind 6 inches. So it's an urgent business. We want to give it to you a week before the sale. We want you to know it's coming, but then here's the catalog a week before, so you're looking at it and it's on your coffee table when it's time for you to participate. Otherwise, people forget, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's a funny thing. We prepare a whole lot, but we really don't want to over deliver too soon, so that people will have, you know, will get a big, wow, that's great, and then it'll be forgotten for the next thing that comes across their plate. So it's a strategic release.
And
of
you
stuff.
Said you said something very interesting. You said, because I'm out of corporate America, and the reason I'm out of corporate America is that I didn't really fit corporate America. I don't fit. You know, I didn't fit the rules, whatever I'm supposed to be, or whatever that didn't fit with me. And I was able to come out and find my own kindreds, like Joe. And some other people that I am having the wonderful pleasure of meeting. When you were with some of those corporate places, mm-hmm. I've been to Sotheby's. They were not that warm. That's why you should be careful how you treat people, because you never know who's going to come up and out and mm-hmm. glow up. You know, mm-hmm. you should be very careful how we treat people. You never know who might be the next thing that you may need to talk to. And, 20 years ago you mistreated them, and now they're some big deal. You know, so when you were at those corporate places, mm-hmm. were you able to take the energy of that corporate, wow, there's everything exposed, you've mm-hmm. got all of these big things, and then take it and consolidate it into a smaller plate and serve it up in the most personable way, which I know you do, serve it up. I would think that it has a better effect on the people that are buying, that they have that personal connection versus the big room where you don't really get to talk to people, and they kind of treat you like, and who the hell are you, because they don't know your name or whatever. What is the difference you see in the atmosphere that you're doing now on a different scale than the one you were doing in the corporate setting? Do you know what I mean?
I love that question, because you're right. I have tried to instill that, you know, in my position, in any of the big companies I've worked with, is, you know, the unique parts of our business are the treasured parts of our business. Mm-hmm. Everybody can sell something, and somebody's going to collect it, you know, whether it's some people like pictures, you know, paintings of creepy babies. Some people like, you know, animal, you never know. There's something for everyone. But in our space of universal experience, it's really good to honor the people that create the material. It's really good to, part of the context is not just, wasn't this a great movie, and this is the meaning that this had to this movie. This is like a great American art form that has so much craft involved in it. And if you think about where the early days, which you love, the early days of the golden age of filmmaking, these people that were illustrators were fine artists who would do this commercial work. So you had some of the finest painters making a 2-minute portrait to put on a wall above a fireplace in some black and white film. Or you had somebody creating a deco lamp out of, you know, salt shakers and you know, gold paint. And, you know, you had all of this craft. And so we try to always remember that the people that we're honoring, the people that made this, and that we, a byproduct of our job is we get to be preservationists. Even though our job is really, our technical job is salespeople, we're preserving and passing things on. Yes, and I'll tell you something about that. One of our proudest sponsors is Motion Picture Television Fund. It's the MPTF who from the, you know, Screen Actors Guild, or, you know, from the, they basically provide services for retired and older people, from housing to support. And they are we're proud to be able to sell things for their charity. And we start our sale, each sale, with something for a Motion Picture Television Fund, whether it's a vintage piece of Mary Pickford furniture or a signed old photograph from the 20s, a silent And we always get to say, you know, all the proceeds from this, the sale of these items, go to the Motion Picture Television Fund, and you're ticking all the boxes. You are getting something that you want to have, and you are supporting an organization that takes care of the very people that made everything that you're going to buy in the sale today. Yes. And so we're able to draw that line between the human beings that put their hands in, you know, in the bread dough and actually needed it to create the end result. We see the end result and we're very enamored of it and it's beautiful and we appreciate it, but they've done their job in being invisible. You know what I mean? They're invisible because, you know, and so we kind of bring them back forward for their bow and we make sure that people know if it's a known costume, you know, the costume illustrators may not have been the costume designer. Maybe it's Edith Head's name, but she had some prime illustrators that did beautiful work and likenesses. Yes. And we try to glorify all those people and, you know, make sure to celebrate every piece of the process.
Have you seen the movie The Devil Wears Prada?
Sure.
Sure. So when they're going through the book, remember the book? The book is everybody you want to know. Anybody's name is confidential. You're going to put the tables where someone's going to be and who's going to sit next to who. And then they had to remember every single person that came through the door. Do you actually have to do that when you're doing the studio auctions where you absolutely have to know by heart without reference or anything what's going on with all of them so you can stand on the floor and just talk without going, wait a minute, let me go grab this and look at this or whatever? Do you have
It's not as superficial as that in our space. Basically, when we get a piece in, that's our time to actually educate ourselves about the person. By doing that, we end up having a relationship with them. And when you have a relationship with someone, you never forget their name, you know? And so that's sort of one of the perks of what we do. We learn as much as we can. And, you know, whether they're living or gone, we feel like we have a really strong relationship with them that makes it easy for us to promote and sell their material because we've fallen in love with them. That's a nice part of the job. You know, it's very personable.
Do you ever get stuck with something maybe coming in that you didn't know that was going to be there or something came at the last minute and they say, look, I quote movies sometime. I'm thinking of the movie Velvet Buzzsaw when she said, oh, put the steel vagina in the back room and put out the divorcees, you know, put that out. Do they do these kind of things in the actual auctions where they'll say, oh, well, based on the people that just showed up, I don't think that piece should be here now. Let's bring that out at 3:30 instead of 1:30 and there'll be a different crowd. Do they do all of that or?
Well, we basically run our auction because specialists are very interested in different parts of the film history. You know, the vintage people are not necessarily interested in the Star Wars stuff and vice versa. So our catalog follows the timeline of filmmaking. It'll start chronologically from vintage material, and then it'll go straight down to the most recent piece that we have from Deadpool or something. And then in between, there may be suites that intersect. For example, if we're going through the 20s, and suddenly we come to the 60s and the first James Bond is slotted in there, we continue that suite of James Bond. We'll do James Bond, right up to current time. Then we come back to our chronology and we start again in the timeline. So it's all sensible, you know, but people can expect if they come at the beginning, they like the vintage stuff, they're going to come in and they're going to be bidding on the stuff from, you know, the 20s to the 60s or 50s. And then the next group will come in who love television and the 60s, 70s. You know, then maybe 80s, some 80s horror movie slasher stuff, 90s, and, you know, and on through. And so that's sort of our whole thing is because it's so diverse and these are one of a kind things oftentimes, it's good to be dependable on where people can find stuff in the timeline of the sale.
So it is cataloged in a way without it being so superficial, as you said, not, right. You know, but it is cataloged in a way. Never be able to afford to go to a studio auction. So I'm trying to really pull from you what they would need to have information wise. So again, what would it cost or what would someone have to do to prepare to go to a studio auction?
Great questions. You know, part of the mystique of auctions is what we talked about earlier. Everybody thinks that everything's $1 million. And that's just not the case. There's some things. I've had friends that wanted a Disney program from their favorite movie. They got it for the opening bit of $100. You know, what? So things can be had. I also, when I did the first Captain America sale, we did it offsite. We did it in Chicago at a Comic Con. There was this kid who was such a great replicator of Captain America stuff. We were selling like all recognizable pieces, hundreds of items from that movie. And this kid, I have $800, and he went after one thing and didn't get it. And he went after the next thing, he didn't get it. And on my way back from a break, I saw him and I said, "How'd you do?" He said, "I didn't get him. There's only one more thing I want, and I'm blown out of the water." I said, "Well, stay in, you know, what's your budget?" He said, $800. I said, "Stay in, you never know." He didn't, he left. And that piece went for $600, so he could have had it, you know? So, you know, the mystique of auction, it seems like you have to have a bunch of money and that it's, you're going to make a mistake and suddenly you're going to, you know, you're going to itch your nose and someone's going to say $4,000 to the man who itched your nose. It doesn't happen that way. It doesn't happen that way. We ask, "Are you sure? Are you sure?" And our job is not to, you know, we're not here to spend your money for you. We're here to give you reason to spend it, you know, and to give you justification and tell you why it's valuable and all of that. So anybody that's interested, I find that just a simple conversation about it, you register for free. You know, you register for free, you sit and you watch the auction. If you have specific things you're interested in, you can let us know what those things are so we can have someone call you and actually hold your hand and bid for you. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you can, through your keyboard, you can bid on anything you want. There's some people that will just sit through an auction and clean up afterwards, like, "Oh, nobody got that. I'm going to make the first bid, you know, I'm going to try to get that." And there's all kinds of strategies, but I don't think there's anybody, you know, that has any amount of expendable cash. And it does take a little bit because, you know, times are not easy and, you know, who wants to spend, you know, $150. But if you did want to spend $150, there are things to be had that you could be proud to own and display. And we'll probably, although we never encourage people to bid strictly on transactional value, because you never know where the market's going to go. Westerns could be king today and then in the toilet tomorrow. Yeah. You never know. But, you know, bid, get what you like and get the best version of what you like, you know?
So someone said to me a few days ago, actually, which I find interesting, when the Gens and the Zs and the Xs and all of them talk, you know, I love hearing what they have to say. And they said to me, "Well, I sure hope that when I go, I don't leave all of this stuff in my house for people to have to come in and collect. I may not want what my parents liked. I may not like this and that."
Amen.
What do you do in those kind of situations?
Collectors, I always laugh. Collectors are glamorous hoarders. I mean, it's treasures, but they're still hoarding. And it's very hard for people to let go of things that they have attachment to. So I have a couple of things that I learned from my mentor, Forrest J. Ackerman, that fellow that started that magazine in the 50s and cultivated all this. He had an 800,000 piece collection in his home in Hollywood that he let you walk through anytime you knocked on the door. So what he would say to me, one day I asked him, "Forry, you've kept that piece for 40 years. How can you stand to let it go? How can you sell it?" He said, I'll do my best impression of him. He'd say, "Well, pal, I've taken care of it a long time. Now it can take care of me." And some people go, a lot of people go, And the other thing I say to people is what I said to you earlier. We're only custodians as long as we're living. You know, afterwards, it's going to go to somebody. Is your family going to care about it? Or is it going to end up in a dumpster? You know, do you want to pass it on or do you want to be buried with it? And those that sound morbid, but that's a real question. Do you want to cling to it until you no longer can say it? That's your prerogative. And I'm a terrible auctioneer in that if my friends come to me and say, "Oh, I want to win," I'll say, "You love it, keep it," which I'm not supposed to do. But it's really important on both sides that we're getting people that are happy to give us a chance to get them top dollar for something and get into the hands of people that are going to love it, or that they're going to not be unhappy with me because I pried something out of their hands that means so much to them that they would have rather kept it. So I'm very sensitive about that kind of stuff. I come from collectors. I don't collect. I have enough people. I can visit their collections. I don't have to own anything. But, you know, I'm very, very mindful of the sentimental attachment. That is what makes top dollar and makes the money. But it's also the thing that people are buying and that it's very hard for people to let go of.
So another example, I was reading and watching the documentary about the life of Vincent van Gogh, who mm-hmm. had a terrible time being an artist. I mean, you know how people are ahead of themselves. Of course, mm-hmm. nobody gets it until they're dead. But mm-hmm. anyway, but in one of the, when he passed away, his family, mm-hmm. who had obviously no education about material worth of things or value, they were found walking, using his paintings as a walking to walk back and forth between one part of the where they lived and the other. Mm-hmm. And then they were discovered. So if something like that were to happen, let's just say somebody had some of those beautiful collections in their home and they passed away. Maybe they didn't leave mm-hmm. the will. Maybe they didn't do a mm-hmm. trust. Mm-hmm. Is there anything on the product or item itself that says return to the studio auction house, return upon disappearance of blah, 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 or upon their death? Return it to the, because it's too valuable to sitting around. Somebody go, I don't know what that is. Throw it over there in the trash, you know, and it's worth
it. I've seen it happen. Yeah. I've seen it happen. And I've also, you know, a mentor of mine who also was a collector that donated a lot also found, and this is not saying anything bad about, I mean, I love museums and other institutions, but what happens sometimes is if we have something we treasure, we give it to them. We're gifting this to you, right? We don't care about a tax break. We just want it to go someplace that is an archive of stuff that's important because I love this thing. It doesn't mean they love it or have room for it or we're mm-hmm. expecting it. I do know people that have donated some obscure things that when they go back, they out of the corner of their eye, they see it sitting in a corner, just sitting there, you know? So it's a very careful business of making sure you know where your valuable materials are going to go. So often, and unnecessarily, and to the detriment of people that could need the money, stuff gets in dumpsters. I know because when I cleared out my friend Forey's garage, while everybody was taking the valuables out into the truck, paintings and stuff, I was upstairs in the garage where it was just paper. I knew that people would throw that away. I was going through finding correspondence mm-hmm. with Ray Bradbury, mm-hmm. with all of these authors, and I was pulling, because the paper is where the history was for him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it is a sad thing that so much ends up being, you know, trashed. But there's really nothing we can do about it except, you know, make ourselves more visible, which we're doing, so that the general public knows that it's an option to explore. Look, even specialists. I had an actress friend, a very well-known actress friend, who was clearing out their stuff. And she said, I don't think I have anything that you guys could sell. I'm going to throw it out with my scripts and my. And I said, wait, a script? And she says, yeah. Oh, it's just my script from the movie. I'm like, that's a time machine. That was with you there. That is the closest a fan is ever going to get to the production. Let me try and say, well, I was going to give it to the Academy, and I was like, well, institution shop with us. Let me take it. Oh, but it's got lipstick and coffee. All the better. It was there. It was there, you know, and sure enough, put it on the block. It sold for $7,000.
Wow.
The institution that she was going to give it to bought it. So she had her cake and ate it too. It went where she would have liked it to go. She got enough money to paint the front of her house mm-hmm. and everybody's happy, you know? And so I just advise all of your listeners and viewers that, you know, they, you know, facetiously say, you know, one man's junk is another man's treasure. Or, you know, woman's costume jewelry is another woman's, you know, prized possession. But, you know, the thing is, just run it past. There's all kinds of specialty houses. If it's jewelry, run it past, you know, a jewelry shop. If it's, you know, you never know what you have there. But to throw stuff out or put it at the swap meet, you never know. I mean, this is a happy story. I knew a person that went to a swap meet, found a box of Bruce Lee letters.
Uh-oh. And
gave the fellow selling them $400. He wanted $600. He only had $4 cash, gave it to him, took it to our auction house. We split it up. We made $400,000.
Oh, shut up.
In that case, the seller went back and gave the original seller some money, which I thought was really
funny. Okay. That's,
he
that's was a very good heart.
A decent person.
That's so, a very good heart.
I think you and I would do the same thing. So it's
nice. I would do that. You know me.
And so I can't stress how important it is to make sure you're throwing out actual trash, and that anything that, you know, somebody in your life valued, you know, could, now most of the time it's going to be prints. It may be just poster prints that are worthless, and there's a billion of them. But every now and then it may be an original print, a Marilyn Monroe picture from the 1950s. Or, you never know. You might as well check it out, because for many of us, I mean, you know, $10,000 is life-changing money, you know, and you never know where that's going to come from.
Yes. Joe, hold that thought. We're going to go take a sponsor break and announce our sponsor once again, Kevin Pike of Coldwell Banker, 818-571-1508. Kevin Pike, he's a senior real estate probate specialist. Helding coming to us from Coldwell Banker. He's cutie pie and he knows what he's doing. So it helps to have both these days. That you're cute and you know what you're talking about. Anyway, so again, Kevin Pike, Coldwell Banker, 818-571-1508. Talk to him about any of your real estate needs. He is a wonderful treasure. Again, Kevin Pike, senior real estate and probate specialist of Coldwell Banker, 818-571-1508. Look at that little cute smile. Okay, and back to Joe. So Joe, what you said about holding on to something that, like the woman that was going to throw it in the trash, and you said no, and you stopped, it ended up being $400,000. What is the process when they let go? I mean, do you get them to sign anything? Do they have to release it to you? Do you have to give it back if it doesn't sell?
Yeah, it's the biggest risk. The biggest risk to a person that has something of value is that they get it back. Now, the auction business, we've talked about what sometimes is scary to the buyer, the idea that everything's going to be $1 million. Let's talk about what might be scary to the seller. Yes. What's scary to the seller is their material might go for less than they want it to. That it'll go away, and they'll be sad that it's gone. All of that is a collaboration, and it's all taken care of before they agree to sign it. We talk about what their expectation is, and my job is to say to them, if you have, for example, let's say that you have the sled from Sits and Kane, you know, the sled or the snow globe. And you bring it to me and you say, wow, this has provenance. I can prove where it came from. All of the bells and whistles that we need to know before we take on a big ticket item. And you say, here it is. And I say, that's beautiful. I'm just looking at it and seeing the provenance, the paperwork. I have no doubt that that's authentic. And I say to you, what do you want for it? And you say, I want $17 million for it. I would say, I don't think I can achieve that. So you should keep it. You know, as much as I want to do it, because it could make $2.5 million, who knows? Sky's the limit. Could push it beyond that. But I have to tell the truth. That's what's nice about this business. We don't benefit anybody, including ourselves, by trying to sell a bill of goods. We have to be able to make the client 100% happy if we're going to make our 10% happiness. We have to make sure that we're taking on stuff that we can, you know, do well with. Actually, because we also want them to tell their friend. They treated us really well. They got me this. I was happy. The one thing that I will do is if somebody comes to me and they say, I want $10,000, I say, well, I think we can achieve that and beyond, but let me break the plane. Let me make it $9,500, just so everyone with $10,000 feels like they have a shot. You know, we don't want to price anybody out because you never know who's going to get it. And it's about building, you know, building competition and fun. And that's the excitement of the auction business. And sometimes there will be no competition. I'll put something up for 100 and I'll say, do I have 100? I have 100 in the room. Anybody advance 100 at 125? Do I have 125? Nobody? Nobody? I'm going to, fair warning, last chance, just $25 more. I've got 100. 100 here going once, going twice, sold. And they get it for the first bid. That can happen. So with people that love to collect but don't love to collect things and have special interests in titles and things, but just collect commercial things. I've talked to people that say, oh, I wish I could have that chainsaw from Texas Chainsaw, but yeah, you know, I can't really afford it. I have a whole bunch of commercial. Well, what do you have? Well, I have these 500 figures. I said, well, if you sell those, you can certainly take a shot at this. And if that has happened and successfully before, and that person became the biggest collector of that subject in the world because they started with that one Holy Grail piece.
Yes.
And, you know, and that's what my mentors told me, buy the best version of the thing you like. Don't buy stuff just to have something from it. Buy something that's really important. Mm-hmm. The better, the more quality you can, even if you have to partner with a friend and say, let's get this together so that we can own the real thing. That's the best way to collect. Because
give them something they can feel. Yeah, let them know their collectible's real, Joe.
Yeah. For real.
I'm like Aretha Franklin said, give them something they can feel. They let them know their collectible's real. Anyway, so when you, what that, thank you for explaining that, because this is explained so much about auctions and the scariness of going. Like you said, a lot of people think they can't afford auctions. They don't have anything valuable. And you may have something valuable mm-hmm. sitting around in your own home that you don't know mm-hmm. about. When you are doing, I want you to explain before we talk about your call letters, because we're right at close of the show. Mm-hmm. When you say the call, what happens in the call? Do you have to rehearse the call? Is the call only lasting a certain time before you have to call another collectible out? Or what happens during that process where you have to go and actually get the people to buy now? You're past the looking and now, okay, we're going to sit down. How does that differ than an art sale or any other sale that might go on?
It doesn't really. It opens okay. the same way. Once I open a lot, the bidders are in charge. It can go as long as it's taking bids, or it can stop. My job is to look around the room and make sure that every component, the phone bidders, the internet, the room bidders, absentees, that all of them are satisfied. Because I don't want to, I'm not stalling so that whoever's got the high bid has to suffer. I'm stalling just to make sure I'm not cutting anyone out. Because with the internet, we have some delay and things like that. So it's a pretty yeah. quick process, and it's pretty routine. If your viewers were to watch the sale, it would be the same. Here we have lot number 78. This is what it is. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll tell a story about it. It's in great condition for an old 1925, you know, silver bromide print. The corners are sharp, not a bump corners. There's a little scarring on the left side, I see, but it's signed boldly in ink, blah, 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 blah. And we have to start this at, and whatever it is. Do I have 500? We get 500, and then it's okay. We'll advance 500, 550, 550, 6, and it'll go like that. But once, it's like waiting for the popcorn in the microwave. Once you hear pop, it's slowing down, you kind of know that it's kind of time to move on, or everybody's going to get restless. But you know, we give fair warning for that reason. We say giving fair warning to the internet, and the internet meanwhile is pushing a button that says fair warning, fair warning, fair warning, because those are the last people to bid. They're hovering with their finger over the keyboard wondering if they mm-hmm. should do it. And then after fair warning a few times, we go going once, and they still can bid. Going twice, they still can bid. Three times, and even if they bid when the hammer's hitting, you know, my gavel's hitting the bar, if they bring a bid in before that's done, we'll put that bid in. We'll keep it going. So we give everybody a chance. It's, you know, it's not about stalling it or coercing anybody. It's just about making sure everybody's got their shot, you know?
Mm-hmm. Wow. I don't feel like the show is long. Every time I get, you know, we get really good, it's time to go. But I want you to, just for the audience, and thank you people out there for listening, give your social media tags. Where can we find out more about Studio Auctions? Don't forget, you guys, May is the month for the 50th anniversary celebration of Star Wars. It is important. I am a huge Star Wars fan. I know a lot of you people are out there too. So what are the media tags that we need to watch out for if we want to get involved?
You can find all the information you need about the upcoming auctions and how to bid and how to register, and even a phone number you can reach me or any of the staff at www.studioauctions.com. The Danny Kay sale, which is really exciting if you like vintage. And we actually made a flipbook catalog, which you can flip through just like you would a paper catalog, with lots of graphics on that site at studioauctions.com. The sale is Saturday, May 3rd. We start at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. There are 106 lots of something for everyone, personal items. So if you love Danny Kay like we do, there's going to be something for you, from personal letters to, you know, his golf club, to shoes that Bill Bojangles signed to him, you know, famous tap dancer, signed to him. It's everything you can imagine that'll bring back memories of that comical and humanitarian genius. And, you know, just look for our auction. And there's also, you can also call our number. I'll tell you what that is.
Isn't it 323-something?
What's that? 747? The office number is 747-241-8255. So that's where you can reach us.
747-241-8255. Is that what you said?
747-241-8255. That's right. And also see, you know, there'll always be flip books of our paper catalog for you to look through. And we're happy to talk to you about how you can consign or bid and have, you know, fun and strategic, you know, success at the auction biz.
And so when we go again, just in case you guys didn't hear, it is www.studioauctions.com, May 3rd, Danny Kay. Danny Kay is a famous comic, dancer, actor, performer from the 40s. I believe he died in 1987, but he's really well known. Again, auctions, Hollywood history, historians like Joe Mo, they have nothing to do with your age. It depends on what you're into. When I was like 12, I was into some old stuff, and they called me like, "What are you? You're 12, and you're into." I think it was some oil that I used to like to wear. My mother's like, "Yeah, she's an old soul because you know she's too dirty one." You know that kind of thing. So you want to really kind of put your teeth into things like that. We want to thank our guest again, coming Joe Mo. Don't forget May 3rd, Studio Auction. Where's it going to be held, Joe? The auction.
At our offices in Burbank. You'll see the address on our
at the Burbank offices. So that's where Studio Auctions are here. So they have a lot. I think he said 106 lots will be open for you to come and let your little hearts desire and buy whatever you want to.
It'll be broadcast internationally. So if you're on our website, you can watch the call as well in real time.
Okay. Is it going to be on YouTube or any of the other platforms showing
the same? I don't think so. It'll just be direct on our site. There'll be a little portal, just like your thing on your screen, and I'll be going blah, 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 blah.
Talking as fast as I do. Yeah. So, bam. Okay. So, don't forget about me. I loke you. One of my old boyfriends used to say he loked me, and it means that he liked me because of who I was, and I had the courage to be who I was and stand tall. And he loved me just because I was adorable, and so was he. And so everybody loved each other. So that's why I say I love you. I love you for being brave enough to watch this show come out and support us every Thursday from 1 till 2 on LA Live. Thank Sam Hassan, the owner. Thank Joe Mo, our guest, coming back today. Don't forget Osiris _ Munir _ the painter on IG. Don't forget about Studio Auctions. com, and don't forget to smile, because a smile can work wonders. And Joe, will you come back again and talk to us more about what happened?
Anytime. This was so much fun. It was like 2 minutes. I love it.
I know it goes by too fast, but I love you too, and I'll see you soon. Bye, everybody. Bye. Have a great weekend and go to the auction. It's fun. See you later. Bye bye.
You are listening to 15 Minutes, the show with Osiris Munir, only on LA Talk Radio.